Hello everyone, welcome to the Laura Horn Art Podcast. Today Richie and I are chatting about setting up a small art space. And the idea for today's episode came about because we've recently moved house. Well, not that recently now, we've been in our new home since November last year, but we've just been getting organized as far as having a small studio space in the home. So we'll be chatting about that and sharing a bunch of storage and organizational ideas.
Hello, Laura. How are you going?
I'm very well, although I have to say that I've had a case of the blues for the last couple of days.
Yeah, me too.
Which sometimes happens when you come off the back of a big project. So we've been super busy working on our free Creative Elements Challenge, which happened last week. And it was absolutely amazing, such a high to see so many people come together. It was beyond our expectations. We've had nearly 10,000 people now taking that challenge. And we've also opened up our e-course, Modern Mixed Media, for registration. So it's all been happening. Sometimes when you have a big thing and then it's the end of it, you get a little bit of a dump. We've talked about this before, a bit of an adrenaline dump. And I think that happened to me combined with some exhaustion as well. So it's happened many times, you know, when I've had an exhibition, a workshop, a retreat, that I have a couple of days afterwards where I feel a bit out of sorts.
Yeah, the one thing I liken it to is, you know, when you come back from holidays and you're like, oh, I need another holiday. Because you're tired from the flight, you're tired from the activities on your holiday. And you're just used to resting. And then when you come back to real life, it's kind of like, ugh.
Yeah.
And you just need those couple of days to get back into it.
Yeah, I've been feeling a bit foggy in my brain and just not very switched on. And we're actually recording this podcast on the day that it goes out because of that. So I needed a couple of days of break. And I was having trouble thinking about what will we chat about today. And then I went upstairs this morning. And I had a bit of a rummage around and I had a look on my Trello and in my Drive to see if anything would jump out at me. And I came across a little video that we made last year. And the video was about setting up our studio space in our new home. And it's a vlog. We chatted on the podcast a while ago about getting back into making some vlogs. But we have held off on sharing it because we thought that we were going to put together another vlog about moving house and that the logical order would be to do the moving house vlog first and then the setting up the studio space after that. But life has a way of, you know, getting in the way, and we didn't end up putting together the moving house vlog, and we've now been in our house for several months. And I looked at this video this morning and I thought, why don't we just share this? Sometimes you don't need to have all your ducks in a row and share things in the logical order. This is a standalone video where I chat about my new space. You get to see it. And I talk about, you know, bringing in my supplies and setting up things in a way where I feel it's going to work well for me and some storage solutions and ideas. A very practical, handy video that stands on its own. So I thought, let's share it. So we have the visual. If you want to go and have a look at the video, you can head on over to laurahornart.com/vlog. It's the first vlog that we've shared in quite a long time, and hopefully it's the first of many as we get back into some more casual videos, because we just love making things. So you can get the visual, and then I thought we could chat about it on the podcast as well. So I'll be a bit more specific on the podcast and talk about some of the things that I love to use in the studio to organize my supplies and my art. Another reason why I wanted to share this video is because when we were putting together the free Creative Elements Challenge, which you can still join, and I will link it in the show notes, we were going to film that from my new studio space, but we had a few challenges with the lighting up there. There's a lot of windows, but it was also a very dark day, and we decided in the end to shoot it down at the kitchen table. And I realized that some people may have wanted to see that studio space, because I know that I am super curious about where artists work and how they set things up. So I wanted to provide that option as well. So it seemed like a good podcast episode to have. So before we get into the discussion around the studio space, I do want to say that the Modern Mixed Media e-course that I mentioned at the beginning is now open for registration. So this is a 6-week course where you will learn about creating abstracts using watercolor, collage, and mixed media. So there are 4 main parts to the course. It covers all my favorite things: botanicals, simple contemporary abstracts, textural mixed media creations with stitching and collage, as well as a module all about finishing and framing your work. So it's a very comprehensive course with all my favorite approaches and detailed step-by-step instruction, as well as tips videos, warm-up exercises. If you enjoyed the challenge was like a little teaser in a way. But in the Modern Mixed Media e-course, it's just so much more, isn't it?
I was just looking back over it, you know, just to double check everything's good. And and then I seen your Instagram post, like your stories, where you broke it all up into little squares. So you'd have 2 squares on each story. And I'm just flicking through and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. I forgot about that one. Oh, that's an excellent video. And I just kept flicking through the photography, the framing. I remember filming the stitching. I think that was one of my favorite ones to film. The one where you do 2 complete flower paintings. And I just remember the tape peel from that one. It's an epic course.
It is an epic course, and we've had incredible feedback on it. And I want to say a big thank you to people who have been continuing to share Instagram posts, stories, and leave reviews of the course. It is a juicy one, and it has got a lot of content that's not in my other courses. So there are things like painting on raw canvas, stitching, and different approaches that I've never taught before. So it is a new course. Having said that, we did run it last year. So if you took it last year, it's the same course. I just want to clarify that for everyone. But it's a new group coming through into that course, and I will be very active in the course during the 6 weeks.
Is it the same Facebook group?
No, I'm setting up a separate Facebook group because I want to give people the same experience as what happened last time.
Yeah, from the beginning. True. Yeah. You don't want to see other people's finished ahead of time.
Because it was such a wonderful experience seeing people go through the course week by week. And every week I would drop the content into the Facebook group, and each week builds. And it went so well last year, I thought, let's do it the same way. So I've set up a separate classroom and Facebook group so that the new group gets that experience too.
Yeah, I just thought about the mood board. We made the mood board.
Yeah, we created a mood board video, like how to bring all your inspiration together and different approaches with that. Yeah, there's a lot in there. A lot in there. Now that I think about it, I think about all the work that went into it. It took us nearly a year worth of planning and filming to put that course together.
Yeah, and editing and everything.
Yeah. So if you want to join in on that, the other important point is that we are limiting spaces. So I want to be able to be in the classroom and the Facebook group and provide support and encouragement. So I have decided this time to put a cap on the number of places so that it doesn't get too big. And last year we had a really nice size group and it worked well. So with that said, we are over half full at this stage. So I'm imagining that registration will only be open until probably the weekend, another few days. So if you want to join this time around, definitely get on it so you aren't disappointed. And there is a coupon code that I want to share with listeners. So the coupon code is MMM21, and that will save you 20% on the e-course. And you can find out all the details if you head on over to laurahornart.com/modern-mixed-media. So let's move on to our review of the week. And I want to say a huge thank you because we've been getting the most incredible reviews coming through. And they're not just a line or a paragraph, they're a story about how our podcast has impacted upon a person's creative life. So I really appreciate people taking the time to do that. And today's podcast review comes from Fisher in the Fabric via Apple Podcasts USA. Real and Relevant. That's the title of the review. I began listening to the podcast while I was in a severe creative drought due to anxiety and stress, precisely the times when creatives most need steeping in their own art. I'd just come off social media, having recognized that the self-imposed pressure to have something to share meant I was always making something instead of just making something. So the making something there was in, what do you call it?
Bunny ears.
I'd been constricting myself right out of my creative skin and felt positively dried out. Listening to Laura and Richie talking so openly, bravely, humorously, tenderly, and reverently about not just art in and of itself, but about the process of making art and the experience of being a creative felt like a rehydration. To know that I'm not alone in my ever-deepening search for who I am as a creative is a lifeline that keeps me moving down that path. All creative people, no matter their mediums, will find valuable treasure in these episodes. The topics are real and highly relevant, brought to life by the delightfully genuine dynamic of the hosts. Simply one of the finest podcasts available about art and creativity today. Thank you. Well, thank you. That's what I want to say. What an incredible...
I don't know whether to smile or cry. Like, that's
but
deep.
It's a beautiful piece of creative expression in itself, that review. Like, it gives me tingles to read it out.
When you were reading it, I was thinking of Sophia, you know, and comparison and social media. And wow, she wrote really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, I related to, you know, talking about constricting myself right out of my creative skin and feeling positively dried out.
Yeah.
And then the analogy of feeling rehydrated. Absolutely.
Which is right up your alley with your moisture reader and your plants and your humidifier and your, what's it, your 1920s water can.
Richie's talking about my plant obsession for anyone that doesn't know, because I have a little moisture meter that helps me check how hydrated my plants are.
But what a beautiful review and what a beautiful way to write. Thank you so much.
Just reflecting on that review, it's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk at the beginning of this podcast about how we both felt a little bit blue the last couple of days. And it was a bit of an irrational blue for sure. But it's important to talk about the fact that there can be like amazing things going on in your artistic creative life and you can see things happening on Instagram for other artists, but there's always other things going on in the background too. And life is challenging for all of us at times. So I always like to try and share as much as possible so that people do realize that we go through that roller coaster too, just like others.
Yeah, sometimes we have to take an inventory and realize that some of these feelings are unfounded and ungrounded. That, like, it's, you know, what's Mark Twain's quote? It's a famous quote where he says that I've had many dramas in my life and some of them were even real, you know?
Yeah.
And it's true.
Yeah. And the last couple of days I knew that I was being totally irrational. Like, I knew that.
Yeah, and you can't stop.
But yeah, I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop being in a funky mood for a couple of days.
And normally we finish filming and I am energized because I've got my editing to do and then you're flat because you've just given so much of yourself to the project. But I can keep, you know, I can kind of be the boy, the buoy, is that how you say?
Boy, yeah.
Yeah. And then when I finish my editing, you've kind of recovered and then you support me when I'm down. But this time we kind of had an overlap where we were kind of both in a funk at the same time. And it's almost compounding.
Yeah.
You know, and it's crazy where your head goes. Like, I'm looking at you and you're tired and you've been on the computer, you've got a headache, and I walk in and you're on the TV and all you want to be is left alone, which is fine. And then I leave you alone and I'm going, she doesn't love me anymore. unfounded, ungrounded thoughts, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, it's like I'm a very introverted person. So when I feel overwhelmed and exhausted, the way that I recover is by being on my own. Like, that's how I get better. So whether that's out gardening with my plants or just having a day at home without anyone talking to me. And then I bounce back after that. Yeah. But that can be hard for other people to understand.
But normally when I'm in a good mood or I'm in good form and I'm traveling really well, I understand that and I see it for what it is. And it doesn't affect me that you want to be left alone. But if I'm a little bit low, I'm like, she wants to be left alone because she doesn't want to be with me. I start making it about me as opposed to it being about you. And yeah, I just forget that life doesn't revolve around me. Does that make sense?
I think we all struggle with that sometimes.
Yeah. What do you mean I'm not the center of the universe?
Well, let's get into our topic today. And we're chatting about setting up a small art space. It might be a room, but it might be a desk in the corner somewhere. It could be your kitchen table. Sometimes we have to be creative about where we work. But I think that you can definitely make wonderful work wherever. Like, it doesn't need to be a barrier the size of your space. You just need to think about it a little bit differently. And I've chatted to many artists on the podcast who started off, you know, making art at the kitchen table.
The kitchen table seems to be the number one.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm convinced it's a rite of passage that the argument you have with your significant other because your paints are all over the kitchen, in the sink, on the table, there's nowhere to eat. Yeah, I think it's a rite of passage for you guys, isn't it?
Yeah, and it also depends, you know, what stage of life you're at and how old your children are, if you have children, because I remember when our kids were young, it was practical for me to have a dining table in our main living space set up with my art and paints. And our son Asher used to build Lego under the table while I was working. He used to play with Lego and then the dog would be under the table and I could see what was going on, which was helpful when the children were young.
I don't know whether I was hearing this. I'll have to listen back. But did you say it was practical for us for you to have your art on the dining table?
I feel like it was. I feel like it was very practical for us to have the dining room set up as an art studio. I mean, just look where we are now. It was pretty bad at one stage. Rich used to rock up home from work and have to move easels and canvases. There was just stuff everywhere in our lounge room. And since then, I've actually downsized a lot. The amount of space that I take up for art has changed. But the style of art and the type of work I make has changed quite a bit too. I used to work more on large canvases. But we'll talk about that in a minute. So the first thing I think that's always important is to think about what your main purpose is with your art and take into account your personal situation, because that can affect where might be the best place to set up your art. You know, how much space do you have available to you and what's practical? Do you want something that you can do when your kids are around, for example, if you have kids, or do you want to be able to hide away? Both are equally valid. So there's those sorts of considerations and light as well, you know, thinking about what light you have available. If you don't have windows, then looking at alternative sources of light and what kind of lights you can set up. And it comes down to making the best use of the space that you have available to you. And if you've ever watched those tiny house videos, sometimes I go for a little binge on YouTube and watch those. They're wonderful for reminding you that you can do a lot in a small space if you get creative with how you use, particularly things like wall space. So if you have a small room, you can do a lot with shelving and stackable tubs and things like that. Definitely, you know, think outside the box and look at how you can maximize the use of your space.
Yeah, IKEA is your best friend.
IKEA has a lot of great storage solutions for artists. And I know when we set up our other studio back in our old house, we used heaps of things from IKEA. And I'm going to run through some of those because many of them I have brought into the studio upstairs. So in today's podcast, I wanted to talk mainly about storage options and space-saving ideas within a studio or wherever it is that you make art. So as far as storing your paints, pens, pastels, and things that you use, I do like to have the main supplies that I use readily accessible. And I feel like that was a bit of a game changer for me as far as making art on a consistent basis. And for anyone who's watched my classes and things, they'll know that I have a tray that I got from IKEA, which is a cutlery tray, which has little dividers in it. And that's been my go-to for years now, because I put my watercolor paints, my inks, my soft pastels, my oil pastels, and my, I think some pencils, pens, all in that tray, and it sits next to me where I make art. And I don't have everything in that tray. That's edited down supplies. So I do have some other pastels and things that I've put away, but I've taken time to think about what it is that I use the most and would be handy to be able to just reach out and grab without having to take the lid off anything or even open a drawer. So I definitely feel like having some kind of open tray or storage solution is a good idea, particularly when you're working on a table or something like that. Another option is to have things like stackable tubs and drawers and crates and things like that, that you can plonk one on top of the other, so you can use that vertical space. And I use the IKEA crates for storing my acrylic paints, because you can stack them and they're quite neat and tidy. But you can also get plastic tubs that stack on top of each other. You could use them for storing things. And then have a look at your walls. If you have the option to use your walls, you can grab something like a pegboard and attach paint tubes to that. I haven't done that myself, but I've certainly seen other artists create boards where they hang their paints on the wall, maybe using like a bulldog clip and some screws into a pegboard or something like that. So that can be a really great way to store paint. So it's very easy, and then you can have all your colors laid out so that you're not having to rummage through a box to find a paint color. Or spice racks are great. We used to have them in the old studio. Haven't done anything in the new space yet, but I did really like, especially when I was painting bigger canvases, I loved having my paints up on the wall in spice racks.
They fit perfect.
They're really good. I think I have the name. They're called the IKEA Beckwurm spice racks. Mm. They are great for tubs of paint. And the cutlery tray I mentioned is the IKEA Varira cutlery tray. And the crates, I'm not sure what they're called. But they're wooden crates, wooden. And they're lightweight as well, because...
Oh, they're apple crates.
Yeah, they're like apple crates. But we used to use actual apple crates, but they're very heavy. Mm. The IKEA ones are nice and light. And they're also, they're snugly fit onto IKEA shelving if you have that. And adjustable shelving is very handy to have in a studio. We have some of that so that you can store your boxes and things like that on the shelving, but adjust the height depending on what you have. So if you have the option of putting shelves in or getting a shelf, I think that's a good way to store paint, so you can easily see what you have available to you. And you might even want to sort your paints into colors. I've done that before, where I've had a box for like warm colors and a box for cool colors.
Yeah, that shelf that we got from IKEA, I stained it.
Yeah, so it came raw and you put a stain on it. And it is very handy for stacking canvases and wooden panels and boxes and things on there. So when it comes to storing my brushes and my pencils and things that I want to keep upright, I tend to use jars, because you can just wash a jar and something from the kitchen and use that. Or tins are great as well. Or you could use any kind of canisters. Sometimes I like going to vintage shops and picking up old canisters or ceramics, you know, various different pots and things like that, and just using those because they look different.
They look cool.
They look cool. And vintage shops in general actually can serve up a whole lot of beautiful things to store art in. We were at one of our favourites here in Adelaide, Gully Morgan's. And remember, we saw that old artist drawing set of drawers?
Yeah, it came from an architect's office, but this is before computers. So they were draftsmen back then. Is this the one you're talking about? Yeah, it was amazing. It was like, it had like brass corners and beautiful brass handles. Did it have inlaid leather in it as well?
It was spectacular.
Yeah.
And it was a bit too big for us, unfortunately. There are some gorgeous bigger items if you have more space, like workshop tables and things like that, that you can put if you have a bigger area. But because we didn't have that, we had to bypass that option. But I did want to mention it's worth taking a look in thrift shops, old flea markets and places like that, because things like pigeonholes, you know, like old pigeonholes, and there's just some really cool things that have compartments, which are excellent for storing art supplies in. Sometimes you want to get away from IKEA or, you know, that kind of stuff and have a bit more a vintage feel or use secondhand items. And so that's a good option. I wanted to circle back to where I mentioned that my work has changed, and I used to work with large canvases. But I have found that working small is great when you don't have a lot of space. So I have switched over to doing more work on paper and in my journals. Because when you are working on big canvases, storage is challenging. Like, they add up quickly. And we've had to get external storage to hold some of my older work because we just didn't have the space. And at that point, I thought, well, what if I do more work on paper? And I can still sell that work, license it, but it frees up a lot of room. And I have been doing that in the last year or two. And I fell in love with it in the process. So it's something to think about, because sometimes we have to be practical. And if we don't have a huge space, then working on big canvases may not be an option. But you could work on big sheets of paper or in a journal and still get very satisfying results. If the big canvas is calling your name, and I well and truly understand that pull, there are some options, and one is to use the wall and put screws on the wall so you can hang your canvas directly onto a wall rather than use an easel, because an easel does take up quite a lot of room. And that's how I used to work in our old studio. So I used to have a couple of screws in the wall, and then I just used to hang, because I'd use a gallery wrapped canvas with about a 1-inch frame around it, and you could just sort of slot that over the screws. So that's one way to save space. And you can also use desktop easels. So if you want to work on a canvas but also have a table, that's a good way to combine the two so that the area becomes a dual purpose area where you can work on canvases as well as do your paper pieces and things like that. Another handy tool to have in a studio is a wheeling cart. So you can move supplies around from one area to another. And I've always had the very popular IKEA Raskog. I've probably said that wrong, but I think everyone knows them. They're very popular carts from IKEA that you can use to store art supplies in. I have one of them in the upstairs studio at the moment. And I just find that handy because of the wheels. You can move it around, and particularly if you have multiple zones. So you have maybe a wall set up to paint on and you have a little desk where you do small work, then you can wheel your cart so that it's wherever you are working at that time. So
I remember when you used to use the bottom part of that for like big buckets of water.
Yeah. 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 Sometimes
you'd say, could you move the cart? And I'd move it and there's water would just go everywhere.
Yeah. Sometimes I would set up the cart so that it was a paint palette. So I'd have my paints in my palette paper in the cart. And then on the underneath, I'd have a big bucket where I could toss my brushes into. So it can work that way as well. I also wanted to mention having somewhere to store finished work so it doesn't get damaged. Took me a while to adopt this, and I was forever leaving work on my table and then starting a project and getting marks on it and dripping paint on things. I was pretty sloppy when I started. And now I do try and put my work away. For the studio, I have a set of Alex drawers from IKEA where I can store my paper pieces flat. But I also find it works well to put your paper pieces in a portfolio folder. So if you don't have the room for drawers, then getting yourself a folder in, you can get them quite large, and slipping your work into the plastic sleeves for protection is brilliant. And there were quite a few people in our modern mixed media community last year that shared this, and I have since adopted the same approach. So I, even though I have the Alex drawers, I love having the portfolio folder because I can flick through it when I'm working and lay something out as inspiration and have it as a reference, but it's got the plastic sleeve on it so that I don't accidentally drip on it or something like that. So you'll see that if you go and check out the vlog, you will see that that portfolio folder in there. I also point out the Alex drawers. You'll see the shelf that I mentioned. You'll see the crates that I use. You'll see the tray. So a lot of the things that I've mentioned in today's episode, you can actually see in the video. The last thing that I wanted to mention, and I talk about this in the video too, is being kind of minimal in relation to your supplies. And you don't necessarily need to have all the things. And I find that I work much better when I edit down my supplies and have only kind of what I need around me. Otherwise, it can get pretty overwhelming when you have all the stuff. So you don't need to have a lot, and you might want to be quite mindful about what you bring into your space or what you have on your table. If you're working at the kitchen table, you could even just set up a tray that's portable or a trolley that's portable. We used to have one of those IKEA trolleys in the kitchen when the kids were young, with paper in it and textures and pencils and crayons for them. And that's kind of how I got started making art, because I would be making things with the kids and then they would disappear and go off and watch TV, and I'd be left in the kitchen colouring in and cutting things up and pasting and gluing, and several hours would go by and then I'd have a masterpiece and the kids would be like, "Oh, Mum.
You ruined our stuff.
What did you do? That's not how I wanted it." I'd be like, "What are you talking about? It's a masterpiece."
Oh, God.
They'd be like,
You ruined it.
You ruined my green monster. And I'd be like, "That was a green monster?
That was the Hulk. Where's the Hulk gone?"
Terrible parent I am.
Trauma.
Yeah, the trauma. No wonder they don't like art anymore. Do not do what I did.
They're going to hate plants soon, I tell you.
I get so obsessed with things that it actually becomes like a deterrent to others. Hopefully not everyone listening.
There's half the audience gone. Okay.
Oh, dear. Where was I?
You were wrapping up, I think.
I'm sure I was sharing some little nugget of wisdom. So, I was talking about editing down your supplies and having what you need close to hand and thinking about the work that you want to create and having those things. So that's the other flip side of it, is making sure that you have the supplies that you do need. Sometimes I, at the end of a year, I do a bit of a stock take and I look at what I have and I see if I've got any empty bottles and I order in supplies, because there's nothing quite like when you're in the groove, just being able to reach and have the things that you want rather than going, "Oh, damn it, don't have any white paint," like you get stuck. So editing down your supplies, but also stocking up on the things that you want and love. And the last thing that I want to talk about is doing it your own way, making it a place that works for you. Because I've noticed looking at artists that we're very different in how we like to set up our studio space. For some people, a creative mess, like a big, juicy, tubs open, stuff everywhere, is just inviting and invigorating. And for other artists, having an organized creative space is what works well for them. So there isn't any right or wrong approach with it. It's about setting it up in a way that it winks at you as you walk by. That's the best way that I can describe it. Think about what would invite you in as you were sort of walking past. Is it a matter of, you know, leaving a sketchbook spread open? That's something that I like to do because I feel like it tempts you in. So if I have a spread that's half finished lying on the table, when I walk past, I go, "Ooh, maybe I'll just add a little bit into that." So that's one of the things I like to do. I also like leaving water containers full with water. That's something I've been doing for years now. When I finish my day, I clean up all my brushes, fill up the water again, and then I leave it on the table so that I can just start when I walk past.
Yeah, I was just about to say that you're kind of like a mixture of both of those, because when you reset, you like to do a big clean, tidy everything up to get started. But then once you're started, you're like quite messy.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you're a mixture of the two almost.
Yeah, that's very true, because the other day when we were filming a little video for the Creative Elements Challenge and I had all my sketchbooks out, so I had quite a few of them, and I had my paints, and then I was just like splashing and scraping and smearing and being very free with my approach. Like, I was so happy. Like, I love that messiness, but I also enjoy cleaning my desk, setting up, filling my water containers. It's like the ritual before you start.
Yeah, but you see it in your art. Your first couple of layers are just splish, splash, moving quickly, almost subconsciously doing your stuff. But then when you get into finishing your painting, it's very particular, you know, mark making, repetition, clean.
There are those two sides.
Yeah, and I can see it in your stuff.
And I find that having both, I don't know, they both serve a purpose. And sometimes I need that messy expression.
Yeah.
And other days I need the calm, the grounding feel of a repetitive mark. It all comes down to reflecting on and noticing what it is that you enjoy and what makes you feel good. And that I come back to that again and again with everything. Like, notice, pay attention.
Yeah.
When you're paying attention, then you can make decisions that support your creative practice.
And it sounds so simple. Notice the things you like and do them. Yet we sometimes move so fast that we forget what we like.
Yeah, and we feel that pressure of other people's expectations or the expectations that we put on ourselves to please other people, which makes me think about that podcast review at the very beginning.
It's very true.
And that can get in the way of us truly and deeply connecting with what actually serves our own soul.
I love what she said. She said she was doing art for the sake of doing art instead of doing art for the sake of doing art.
Exactly. And I feel like that's a perfect place to end today's conversation. Thank you everyone for being here. I hope you enjoyed the episode. And don't forget, if you do want to join us for Modern Mixed Media, it's our 6-week e-course. It's our baby in many ways. Mm-hmm. The spaces are filling fast. So if you want to join in, head on over to laurahornart.com/modernmixedmedia. And when you are in the cart and you see the little box for the coupon, I know it can be hard to see, but please do make sure that you put in the coupon code MMM21. As I want to say a big thank you to our podcast listeners, and I'd love for you to save 20% using that coupon. That's it for this week, everyone. Have a wonderful week, and I hope that you'll join us again next time.